sinks.
Hi. Welcome to episode 2.
My name is back.
Who's back?
Whoever's listening. I don't know. I'm glad
My name is Rob.
I'm Lindsay.
This is the Weightless Space. And then I don't say podcast.
Good job.
For this episode, there's a little bit of a backstory to say. When you and I met, when you and I met, one of our first dates was
a group date.
Yeah, we're not talking about that date. It was a wonderful date.
But this is the conversation following that date.
Okay, so following that date,
mm-hmm.
Our first times together, very early on is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
We spent a long evening talking in the car about all of our past experiences.
Not like all of our experiences, but like all the things we don't want to have in the relationship.
Slightly negative.
Like pretty much the breakup conversation. Like this is what really sucks.
This is what's too much. I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
This is not good.
Right. The things that you don't say.
I expect this. All those things. Not me expecting it, per se.
Right.
But literally just going over all the things that were hardships in previous relationships. We started with the end as the beginning.
Right. Isn't there, there's a song about that we've talked about. What's it called?
Start with the Ending by David Wilcox.
Yeah.
And we saw that at a little house concert, and it literally talks about the exact same thing, and it was beautiful, and it's been one of our little treasured songs over the years because it is so easily related.
Yeah, it kind of describes our beginning as well.
Yeah. So we figured for this episode, we would start with all the shit things that happened
But start at the end. Where it ended with institutional Christianity.
Yes. And I have a question because I want to talk actually about the two. There's two things there.
And maybe, I have a question too.
Do you want to ask ourselves first?
You go first.
Do we want to say the thing or do we want to start with the questions?
I don't know what you're referring to, so let's just go.
Okay. What was the last straw? What was the end? Let's start with the end.
So the last straw with institutional Christianity for me was I was really excited about a position that was open in the church that I was in, and it was with student ministries, and I had been doing children's ministries, and it had been open for a while. There was a vacancy for some months, and I put together like a proposal and like a forecast, and you know, I went to business school, so of course made it all official. Started asking some of the team members if they would be, you know, supportive. I got yeses from everyone. Went to the leadership. Got yeses from the leadership. And then was starting to do the work of that position in student ministries. It was like director of student ministries was the title. So I was doing the work for a few months, and I had done some good things. You know, they, as most student ministries do, they have a an annual trip, and I was able to, you know, shave some money off of that, renegotiate some contracts, really kind of set it up well. When the time came for me to actually move into that position, I had gotten a lot of yeses as I was doing my old job and I was doing that job at the same time. And so I thought I was going forward. And then I got a phone call from an elder telling me that I was not qualified to hold the position of director of student ministries, that they really wanted a seminary-trained pastor.
With a penis.
Basically. I mean, there's not a lot of seminaries that will train women for pastoral leadership. So
I was being cheeky, but the words that they used were male normative. He should be trained by a seminary.
Right. And then I was told, like, not only was I not qualified in spite of my degree in management, business management, but that I could come on as his secretary, but if there was a personality clash, I would lose my job altogether. And that was a scary thing for me because we were both working, you know, at this particular church, and our family's livelihood was on the line, and they were so...
Well, we had all of our eggs in one basket.
Yeah, I was so passionate about it, and they just so easily said, hey, you're disposable. So for me, that was the last straw. What was yours?
Well, I do want to, you know, debrief that a little bit, but I'll tell you mine right off just so we can have them at the end. Last straw for me.
Wait, but you said you wanted to debrief what I
Yeah, no, but I'm going to tell you the... I'm going to tell you mine, okay, and then we'll string it out.
Some. I'm ready.
I think for me, it was actually an easy thing to have be a final straw just because of the drama behind it. And of course, we're not talking about this to dig up drama, but really just to talk about how we experienced it and what our feelings were as we experienced it. We were in a staff meeting towards the end. It was a big one, kind of. I can't remember if it was impromptu or not, but it was basically, it felt impromptu.
It was. I was there. It was like a last minute.
Yeah. Everybody and I think at the time the staff was around 100 or just shy of it or something. So it was, a mega church staff. You got 80 plus employees. A big deal.
There's a lot of people, yeah.
So we showed up to the staff meeting and some words were said, blah, blah, blah. But the culmination happened when... The lead pastor at the time said, I can no longer serve Jesus while I'm on staff here. Period. I like my body shut down. I stopped listening. I didn't hear anything else. I just didn't know how to understand, like, if... The person that's kind of giving us vision and direction and whatnot in order to lead and teach and preach about Jesus says they can't serve Jesus while being on staff here. Then I was really wondering, what in the world am I doing? What is happening? Now, that's an easy moment to pin, but the truth is...
Yeah, because you didn't leave right away. It took you a few months after that.
Correct. In fact, what happened to you was kind of like the last thing. I think I've spent like 6 months trying to process, or 3 months, whatever it is, to process what was going on, not only in myself, but also in this organization. And I didn't know how to handle it. Like, I didn't know what to do with that information.
Yeah.
When you got that phone call regarding your inability to fill this particular role based on your...
Alleged.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Inability, because I think I was more than able.
Yeah, of course. it just became very clear that the structure of that organization was in dire straits. Now, we have said it before... This process is like a death by 1,000 cuts.
Sure.
And there's not one thing that we can say, hey, this is the reason why. But it was really just a bunch of little cuts over time that then accumulate. Like, why am I bleeding all over the place? Like, I am hemorrhaging blood. And you look down and you've got all of these cuts all over you. That's kind of a gross...
Well, I mean, after you left... Timing-wise, when you left working vocationally for this church, I left. It took me 15 months to have enough. So there was just for time's sake, there was a big difference between my last straw and your last straw. There was 15 months of it. And in that time, I experienced a legitimate biblical shunning. Like... I was in these leadership meetings. I was invited to the circle. I was invited to the table. And you were as well. But I didn't know that my invitation hinged on your presence. And that when you left, I no longer was invited. I wasn't spoken to when passed in the hallway. I wasn't, hey, what do you think about this? That wasn't presented to me anymore because you weren't there. And I don't know whether it's the way you left or the fact that you weren't there.
I did burn the bridge a little bit. Like when I left, at the time, politically, people were leaving at such volume that the monthly staff meeting had a special section of, oh, so-and-so is leaving. True. They got called by God to go do something else because that's the excuse everybody gives in those settings. It's like, oh, God's called me to go do this thing and whatnot. And I was determined when I left not to be like, hey, God's called me to this other thing. Good riddance. Goodbye. I really wanted to communicate the reason I'm leaving is because all of this sucks. Like this is things are terrible. Not because God called me to some other grander thing, but rather we've all shit the bed.
And I get embarrassed easily. You have the constitution of granite. You're never embarrassed. I've never seen you really embarrassed. But your that staff meeting, your scripture reference of gnashing babies' heads upon the rocks and saying, like, are we really taking everything literal? And you use that scripture. I was like, my face was hot. I was like, oh, Lord, what is happening?
Yeah. What's funny is I really don't remember what I said because it was all heat of the moment kind of a
I remember your point very much was, hey, we really need to be listening to how God is moving us and not just making decisions based on these like piecemeal scriptures that we're using to try to support our ideas instead of really focusing on the message that God is giving us. You know, we're not spending time in prayer. We're just kind of piecemealing things.
With that being said, do you feel the shunning that you experienced? First of all, I didn't feel like your seat at the table when we were having meetings at the time felt like, oh, let's include Lindsay because Rob's included.
But I want you to recall that I would say, hey, I said this and I don't think anybody heard me. And then the next time we're in that meeting, I would say, husband, will you say this? And you would say it, and everyone would listen. So, like, there was symptoms, if you were, will. There was some perception that was the case. I didn't realize how much that was the case. And literally, I had a circle of friends and work comrades that disappeared overnight when you left. Mm. And that process, I thought, okay, well, it's just the transition. Give it time. 15 months, and it never changed.
Well, that was kind of getting at was. I do wonder till this day, if you were being consciously or unconsciously mistreated because I went out with a bang and not polite. You know, I made it clear that I was
not happy.
Not happy.
Sure.
And so I almost think that part of that, and I can't excuse the behavior one way or the other. You know, I'm not doing that. But I wonder if some of that was quite literally like, oh, don't talk to them. They're explosive.
Well, it wasn't everybody, but there was a large percentage of the people that I had associated with and spoken to on a daily basis who didn't ask me. Yeah. And that's the part where, you know, I feel like it's a biblical shunning. Like if something happens and you're like, okay, I see this is where your husband's at. How about you? How are you doing? Like very few people came to me and asked me like, hey, how's it going? Like, are you okay? How's your marriage? How's your husband? And the shunning aspect was real. It was real.
Do you think, this is kind of a personal question.
Okay.
Do you think that your stubbornness, because you're a stubborn person, I'm a stubborn person.
You're going to have to qualify this. I'm just letting you know.
that your stubbornness was being 15 months. Did you stay longer because you were stubborn? Because I know that when I left, I was like, let's all leave, you know, F this place.
You told me every day to quit.
I told you every day, get the F out of there.
And I would have to say, husband, this is my choice. You can't tell me that.
Right.
So,
was there stubbornness in...
I mean, sure. Probably the more you told me to quit, the more I didn't want to just do what I was told. I wanted to make my own choice. But, in some ways. But I really, I mean, this... I had put everything into this group of people. Like, my amount of loyalty was probably more a factor of me staying so long after this kind of catastrophe that you decided it was time to happen. And also my optimism that, you know, people are hurting and they need time. And I waited as long as I could to still be okay myself. When I started feeling like I'm not okay is when I was like, all right, this is affecting me, like how I feel about myself. And being in this community, I can no longer, like I don't feel I belong.
That was a hard 15 months for me.
I know.
I'm going to make this, your section, a little bit about me. That's a bad joke. But honestly speaking.
I'm used to it.
Honestly speaking, having you go back there. After I had quit, hurt a lot.
I know.
Not because I think that you were... It just hurt. It just hurt because
I
wanted to be done.
You were done.
You know, I wanted to move away on. Yeah, I just wanted to get rid of it.
Sure.
Expunge it, you know?
See, I'm not... But you and I operate differently in that area.
I know.
I'm not a... I'm like a hanging on to the thread type of person. And you're like it's broken, get rid of it, get something new type of
But
person.
Even then, as I'm thinking about what I'm just now saying, like that is more conditioning on my part and other male/patriarch for me to say, I'm done, therefore you're done.
Well, it's conditioning for me to hang on and wait for someone to appreciate me.
I get it. But I'm just saying, like, I expected you to move with me because that's what... you know, wives and women should have done.
Oh, maybe that's why I was shunned. Everyone else expected it too.
Oh, maybe they thought you were going to be on your way out. Why you couldn't have stayed on your
they
own?
They didn't know that my heart was actually you had where
your own,
I was.
Right, you had your
own
agency.
My own mind.
Right. Because it was
little do they know.
Yeah.
And now just to set it up, like I had seen this is at this particular church. This was not the first round of Exodus. We were on, like, we had seen multiple rounds of either layoffs or people who disagreed with decisions that were made, and specifically on staff people who, you know, we were with, and it's different than just a regular job, because I've worked in corporate and private and also, you know, vocationally at a church. And it's different because you're there every weekend, every holiday. You're there, you know, special events, 14 hours a day. You're there, your whole family is there. Our whole family was serving. I did not spend time with my biological family. This was my family.
Right.
And
it was a lifestyle.
It was a lot.
Yeah, more than a lifestyle. It was
like
life.
I don't even think we went on vacation for 5 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, right.
This was it. Like this... Why go on vacation when you love what you do?
Yeah. I mean, and for the record, still to this day.
Favorite job.
My absolute most favorite job.
I know. I mean, there's a lot of bad that happened, but favorite job ever.
Like when all the cylinders were firing in order, man, that was a special time and place.
I know. I miss it.
And that is what I think makes some of that leaving that much harder, because all things being considered, I would love to have that experience again.
Sure.
I would love to have that sense of shared mission. I mean, the people we worked with were A-list top tier people.
Excellence.
I mean, excellent in every way.
Yeah.
Which is all the more of a conundrum when you're trying to understand how is this breaking down? How is this?
Right.
Why is this not working anymore?
And that's part of why I stayed for so long. It's because I'm as an individual, I'm a high loyalty individual. Mm. And it's loyalty is really important to me. So, you know, the people that I consider in my circle, they're in there, and it's really hard to get out of that.
Yeah.
So, you can say it was stubbornness, but really, it was a mixture of stubbornness and optimism.
Right.
And then just how I'm built.
Yeah. You know, I think when I look back at this list of other grievances, for lack of a better word, you know, when we were kind of brainstorming what happened and what was the background to get to this place. And if we work a little bit backwards, it's hard to kind of see chronologically what happened. It was a mishmash, a blob that kind of rolled all over your life, you know, and you would really not notice like when one hurt or zing or gotcha happened and another one started, you know. So if I'm rolling back the clock and going back in time, pre the staff meeting where the lead pastor says, I can't serve Jesus and be here, you know, we had the Pulse shooting happen in our community. Mm-hmm. And that was a tragedy where a number of folks were killed from the LGBT community. And quite frankly, I think our lead pastor at the time, you know, his own admission was, I was unaware of that community. And here is this huge group of people that are hurting. Let me find out who they are. Because I think at the time he was driven to love people well, whoever they were, where they were.
That's kind of the catchphrase, right?
Yeah. And I think that's what one of the things that was the, you know, the beginning of the end as it relates to that occurrence of him stepping away. I'm not saying it is the thing, and I know that there are many more stories that went on, and you and I are two out of hundreds of people
Sure.
that have their own stories that experienced this. And if you were to mishmash them, it would be like a tapestry of you know, goods and bads and hurts and all those things. And so trying to thread a single narrative through it is incredibly difficult, you know. But that particular church's handling of the LGBT community, and I think we'll talk about this in an episode maybe in great detail or greater detail, was not great. Like, there were some wins, but they came at an expense. Like, we had a I don't know the right word, symposium, meeting. I don't know what you would call it, right? We invited key members of the LGBTQ community. There was open dialogue. It was actually a wonderful evening. And just because of a vocal few voices that did not care for how that was handled, it was kind of wiped clean, like we didn't do it, you know?
Yeah. And the part that, I mean, at first I was so proud of how, as a group, we responded and were like, hey, let's just be curious and listen. And I think, you know, post-pandemic and everything that's happened with Black Lives Matter, it was a smart response. Like, hey, let's be curious. Let's listen to this group of people's experiences and let's learn.
Yeah.
And I don't ever think that listening, learning, and being curious is a bad response.
Right.
But that, when I was first super proud, after that was like overturned, for lack of a better word, mm-hmm. There was nothing super to be proud about with right. that decision. Like, it was embarrassing.
Yeah.
For those of us who thought that that was the right choice to make in the first place.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, and I have I do have another thing that I could say was like a huge deal. My heart, as just my personality as a protector, especially, which we talked about a little bit last episode, for those without a voice or without, you know, the authority, the means. So for me, that translates specifically to children. Mm-hmm. And I really have a heart for protecting children. I believe that, you know, the amount of tragedy that happens to children really needs more attention in just in this world, period. Children and the way that they're taught and the way that they're raised and the way that they're treated matters. And I think it would do wonders to heal the world if we paid more attention to how the children are treated. Anyways, at this time, when I was on staff at this particular church, I did have the opportunity to work with children and some of their trauma and, you know, just bringing hope and healing in that place. And one of the things that happened is I was really instrumental in, like, this was a dream, literally a dream that I had. And it's one of those dreams where I wake up and it's so visceral, so real, that I was like, man, I got to see if this is a possibility in my life. And I shared it with a friend, and we got off the ground, and there was training, and we had all of these camps, and we were doing these things, and we were working with groups of children, and I was seeing the difference that it made, and these children who would come in, and they were withdrawn, and they were subdued, and they would spend, you know, these few days with us in camp, and they would leave, and they would just be full of joy. We would encourage them, like, hey, you're really a great leader. Hey, you're really a great listener. Whatever it is, we would try to find something excellent about these children and just encourage them that they're special, they're loved, that God has a purpose for them. So we put all this work into this. And from the politics side, you know, my role was really doing all the background, all the calling, all the administrative setup, you know, all the paperwork. We started to branch out and want to reach out to a larger community, not just the church congregants, and maybe looking at after-school programs or, you know, orphanages, and just working with children that were in the system already. And at that point in the process, I started to get cut out of those conversations. Like, I would make a meeting and people in management would change the meeting and I wasn't invited anymore. Mm. And it, like, for me, because it was such a personal passion of mine, for those meetings to happen and for me to find out about them after the fact, I was devastated.
Right. Right.
Like, I really felt like the rug was being pulled out from under me. And this was actually previous to me wanting to go into student ministries. This was working with children.
And it was because you felt so called. I'm sorry for the kitsch word.
No, absolutely.
You felt like that was the thing.
Yeah.
And then to be not included in a space in which you were supposed to do that which you were called to do.
Especially, right? After I had put in all the work to get it off the ground.
Right. People work at churches because they answer a calling. At the end of the day, they typically feel called to do something.
Well, it's not for the money.
Yeah, true. And so I can see how devastating that would have been to have those experiences where I'm being, you feel a calling and saying, this is what I'm supposed to do. And it's not only just providing meaning for me, but it's actually help. I feel like I'm being used by God to do a thing.
Oh, yeah.
In the world.
Not only that, but that was my life's purpose.
Right.
Like, my specific personal backstory, like everything that I had been through, had led me to this moment. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but sometimes when tragedy hits, you just feel like your heart sink into your stomach. You literally feel nauseous. Mm-hmm. And when I found out that they had that meeting and I wasn't invited, I was like, and it persisted. I was gutted. Yeah. So it wasn't that I wasn't invited once. It was that, right, I was no longer invited.
Right. I have a side question for this.
Okay.
It's kind of a pivot, but not a pivot.
Sure.
We've been using the phrase leaving the church and leaving, evangelical Christianity, mm-hmm. kind of synonymous, but they're two different things.
Okay, tell me about it.
Well, so I was going to ask you about it more than I was going to tell you about
it. Sure.
We obviously left the church.
We did.
Right? No, we're not there no more. I thought of a meme. I'll keep it to myself.
Okay.
And so there's no denying we left the, you know, we left the physical church. We're not employed there anymore. We've moved on.
Sure.
And we have not really even been back to church services. And we can talk about that.
Not there. Right.
Right. We've been to a handful of some others beyond then, but do you consider yourself having left evangelical Christianity as a religion / experience / belief system also, and is it for these same reasons?
Wait, can you ask that again?
Yes.
There's too many slashes. Can you do without the slashes?
Okay.
This is not a heavy metal song. Calm down. No slashing. Do I consider myself?
You left the church. That's without question.
Okay.
Have you left Christianity?
Have I left Christianity? Well, you're not going to like my abstract answer, but I'll say it to you anyways, and then I'll explain it to you if you have questions. I don't think I've left Christianity. I think Christianity has left me. Hmm. And I mean, what I mean by that...
Christianity has left the building.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, I think about when I left working at a vocational church, it was, 2019?
Sure.
Yeah. And the mantra that was being raised, the flag that was being raised in evangelical Christianity was starting to blend with a particular political party. And I don't think that if I sat in a room with a group of evangelical Christians, we would even have the same basis for faith anymore. So, like, do I have faith? Absolutely. Is it what they consider Christianity? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. 'Cause there's a lot of people who have been ostracized of late by Christian groups. And, you know, I go back to at least my foundation, my grandfather, even though he wasn't an evangelical, he was Catholic. My grandfather, before service, would go down the street to a different church of a different denomination. I don't even know what it was, Seventh-day Adventist or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would clean their toilets before their service. And then he would go and he would do the sound engineer for the Baptists down the street.
Right.
And, you know, he would set up everything.
He was bored, is what you were saying.
No. I mean, he was an active person. But He would spend his time serving others mm-hmm. that were not in the same groups as him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. And I think the exclusivity that a lot of evangelical Christians hold right now doesn't speak to the love that is actually taught in the Bible.
Yeah. It's difficult because your answer, by the way, I don't think it was too abstract. I follow you spot on and basically agree with you. I think I've left evangelical Christianity. I also think that its definition has also changed a bit to where that's a muddy question, you know?
It is.
I get that it was not there's not a straight answer for it, and I acknowledge that. That being said, I do believe I have left evangelical Christianity, not from my own definition and their definition both. And I don't necessarily adopt the word Christian anymore, but again, that's just definition more than it is specificity. Mm-hmm. I guess what I wanted to maybe dial into was the experiences that we were talking about. that sense of betrayal, mm-hmm. or being shunned, or being
disowned.
Told.
It's disowned.
Disowned.
Yeah.
Did that have an effect on your belief systems?
Well, I don't think it affected me as much as it affected you. Yeah. And that's only because I don't think I really fit the prototype evangelical Christian the whole time I was there. I think I kind of stuck out a little bit.
Yeah,
like I had
definitely.
I remember
tattoos. Oh my gosh.
I literally remember you having a conversation with like someone in the bookstore about tattoos, and they were saying like they're devastated because their kid wanted to get a tattoo and they thought that that was like a sentence of their child's soul to hell. And you're like, "Hey, my wife has tattoos. Come and show them. You're not a sinner." And I was like, "Oh my god.
You're saved.
God.
Let's see that skin."
I mean, to me, that's shallow. Like, tattoos being the defining, you know, difference
right.
between heaven and hell. I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so.
Right. Well, that's a great example of the definition of what is it to believe, right? So that person had some definitions and some predefined parameters that meant what something was. This is Christian. Christians can't have tattoos because that's unchristian-like, right? And that gave definition to their understanding of what it was to be
borders to their community.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah, exactly. And so, I guess what I'm trying to debrief with this conversation is.
It did change my relationship to my faith, though.
Okay. That's what I want to hear about.
So it changed how willing I was to allow others to have spiritual insight and authority into my life. Meaning... the dog licking... I am much more careful about who I listen to, because a lot of those people I had listened to for a long time, and I had an impression of who I was pretty sure I thought I knew who they were, until it came down to these, like, I guess, hot button topics. And then I saw them choosing, you know, to exclude and to tell people, basically, you're not welcome here. Like, I had to tell someone on staff, like, hey, you can no longer volunteer. Not on staff, sorry, a volunteer. You can no longer volunteer if you're an active part of the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And to me, that doesn't make sense.
Right.
Like, you're not welcome here. That doesn't right. make sense. That's not from what, and like I said, you know, my schooling wasn't particularly set up to be a male pastoral leader in a church, so I was allowed to just read the Bible.
Yeah.
Well, how about you? How did leaving Christianity change your relationship with your faith?
I mean, the quick and true answer is absolutely, absolutely.
And in what ways?
The nuance is strange because I've always been a seeker. It's a generic Christian term. Like, if you're a Christian, you've heard the term seeker.
It's also a sci-fi term, just so you know.
Sci-fi term?
Yeah, like in fantasy books, seeker is a big thing. Anyway.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I gotcha. I track. Yeah. Yeah, and that's actually kind of similar-ish.
Accurate, yeah.
But if you're not in the church and you don't have the church vernacular down, a seeker is just someone that is like looking to for God or a godlike experience.
Somebody or a bigger purpose.
Right, exactly. There's got to be more, right? Somebody that is attuned to this idea that there's more than the five senses in this material existence we all are in. And so, you know, without going over the, you know, my life story regarding, you know, growing up in a Baptist church and all that stuff. Early on, pre-evangelical Christianity, I stumbled across books on Jesus and the chakras, and I had even no idea what I was reading about, you know, but I was reading all of this bizarre stuff. Mm-hmm. And I didn't internalize it, but it did feed, there's people that are thinking about things that are different than the five senses and the material plane.
Right.
And getting into religion was a great way to think about weird stuff and still be legitimized. You see what I'm saying?
There's a lot of weirdness in Christianity.
I know, but
like it's weird.
I felt like once I got into evangelical Christianity, you could really like adopt all kinds of strange esoteric beliefs about the nature of the universe and angels and demons and spirits and principalities and whatever you want to say. You know, you can take that long, you know, revelation, prophecy interpretation. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a good chunk of stuff in there to kind of read through. And consequently, that's kind of you're not outside the normal if you think about those things and adopt in that space. The way that it's done, now I'm answering your question. Mm-hmm. The way that it's changed is since I don't see myself as being legitimized by being part of an evangelical belief system, I'm back to thinking about the nature of God in a free form, weird way.
Fringe. Yeah.
Which is kind of fun and kind of, I mean, it's mostly fun, but it's also kind of
scary.
It was scary. It's not now scary.
Okay.
But when earlier, I'd say 2 years ago, it was scary to go back to thinking about God outside of the confines of systematic theology, you know, in that. So to answer your question, you know, I am a faithful person still. I still believe in something supernatural. Mm-hmm. My hope is that God is real, that God is good, and that God will, at the end of the day, he, she, source, universe, whatever God is like, will take care of that which needs to be taken care of, if mm-hmm. even things need to be taken care of, mm-hmm. you know. And I can rest on that. Aside from that, I have given myself the freedom to love and experience this world and the supernatural without the confines of evangelical Christianity. So, long-winded way of saying, my faith absolutely changed, but I still think about things like the divinity of Christ. Mm-hmm. I still think about the nature of God. Mm-hmm. I still think about some of the parables and some of the proverbs and, dare I say, some of the psalms, even though I really hate the psalms.
That's my favorite.
And so while I have left evangelical Christianity, there's parts of it that have not left me.
Mm. I want to expand my answer.
Okay,
I like
go
your
ahead.
Answer. So just like part of the reason why I didn't fit in evangelical Christendom is because I was raised Catholic and then in my teenage years kind of did my own thing. And I was a seeker too. Like, and I read a lot about, you know, Egyptian society. I read a lot about Muslims. I read a lot about Wiccan. Mm. I read a lot about Druidism. I read a lot about, I'm really drawn to nature, so I was any religion that kind of centers around nature was a draw to me. So it's kind of funny though. So when I was really reading about Wiccan and what that was, because it is a lot of it is nature centered. There's, you know, rituals and spells, mm-hmm. practices, and beliefs. Mm-hmm. And so your belief fuels your rituals and spells, and your practices are also fueling your rituals and spells. Well, the same dynamic, the same construct exists within Christianity, you know. So your faith, your prayers are effective by your faith, you know. Mm. Your practices are a demonstration of your faith. Mm. And your reading of the Bible and knowledge of the Bible is what increases your relationship with God and your faith. And so the same parameters, the same setup is the same in Wiccan as it is in Christianity, as it is in other religions. And I think that's because it is how it works. I mean, it's the same in psychology. Mm. You tell yourself something enough, you're going to believe it about yourself. So there's so many times when I would hear something from a Christian, a leader, from the pulpit, and it would sound like a spell to me. Mm. And I can differentiate where it's coming from, you know, whether it's your intentions or this or that, but even in the differences between other religions and Christianity, the intentions are really important, you know. So I just wanted to say, like, I don't think I ever really fit the mold because I had such a diverse background, and I never took the things that I learned and threw them all out the window. I know a lot of people go through the burning phase when they first become a Christian.
I broke through like 300 CDs, the heavy metal CDs, like snapped them in half.
Are you sad about that now?
I cry about it at least once a week.
I mean, and there's a lot of restrictions that, for me, when I came to Christianity, I was a recovering addict, and it was literally a life-saving moment for me. And the transition of changing one group of friends that was, in all actuality, killing me. Mm. Into this group of friends that were talking about life and beyond. Mm. It was, I'll never look down on somebody for their involvement. Because it was life-giving to me. I didn't just learn something new. I was transformed into something new. Right. And I really believe that. But it didn't take away any of the other things that I had learned or my other experiences. So, coming out of it on the other side, the weight of Christianity in my life, like the amount of things that I participate in and practice is different, but its involvement in my life is the same as all the other things that I've studied, you know. And mm-hmm. I think you and I are just lovers of philosophy and, mm-hmm. you know, sociology and human nature and everything that comes with that. Mm-hmm. So that's my augmented answer.
That's a good addendum. I like that. I like that. Well, thank you for taking a detour on answering that question, because I think what's interesting when we think about leaving the church, when we talk about leaving the church, I left the church. There are people. There were conversations post that was like, why don't you find another church that like includes gay people? Or has a woman as
as a pastor.
And that was honestly a very difficult answer for me to, a difficult question for me to answer, because I didn't want my faith to be so attached to a seemingly progressive or political agenda one way or the other.
Right.
Like I was rebelling against Republican conservatism encroaching into that faith space.
Or but the opposite.
But I didn't want to necessarily make my faith space to be, you know, liberal and progressive. Like, I didn't want those attributes to be about, because those felt worldly.
Yeah.
And I get that we live in a mixed world.
Right, but you didn't want that to be your identity.
Right, I didn't want to just say, hey, I'm not a, you know, Republican anymore. Now I'm a Democrat. Like, I didn't want to associate the nature of God with...
political parties.
with contemporary American political parties. It seems so absurd. Beneath it.
And absurd.
And absurd.
Yeah.
And so the desire to go just find more like-minded people... I avoided that for years, you know, going, because even going into a church where there would be maybe more progressive demographics, and I would be thinking about worldly things instead of heavenly things,
right?
Because of what I was seeing in that moment, or at least that was the thing.
And because people ask you to make a choice,
right?
And are you this or that?
Right? Am I this or that? And I don't want to be either of those things.
I don't want to be in your boxes.
I don't want to be in the box. You know,
yeah.
Which is why I haven't really spent any time, you know, trying to go back to a group of people that have a religious "quote unquote"
it sounds gathering. So, it sounds so trite and absurd when you put it that way. An American political agenda. Surely God is greater than that. Surely, I mean, this is like a blink in the breadth of time.
But that's the thing. Surely about God's
God
nature, right?
Because you would greater than that.
You would you think two things. It's a dual kind of thought to me. One, God is so far above and so far removed. Who cares? Like he or she is talking about eternity. It's talking about a completely different paradigm.
Right.
And then you want God to be. I want God to be present and with me here and now in this moment and align to my specific belief and feel deeply personal. And how could God be personal if God isn't, you know, understanding of, you know, certain demographics, you know, that are specific? And so it's like this dual nature of, is God?
That's the question.
Yeah.
That's what, as many times as I've heard people try to explain that they believe in something greater than themselves in the world, in the universe, in the existence, regardless of how they deem their God or what their faith is, that question of how can they be infinite and personal here at the same time, that's the thing. Mm. That's the thing. And I don't think that humans have a good grasp of it. I don't think that what we know of any religion right now, none of them have the right answer. None of them have it all.
I don't know that I'm willing to say there's no right answer. Well,
no, I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm saying what is outlined in religious groups right now.
Sure.
None of them have all of the pieces.
Oh, I see.
I don't think we can grasp all of the pieces. I think there's... For me, you talk about something beyond the five senses. I think there's so much more that we experience, and we're literally deaf and dumb to it. Hmm. Deaf and dumb to it. And once in a while, you get like an aha moment, and it transforms you because you get to see, you know, if I'm using Christianese speak, behind the veil, or just, you know, regular speak, you get to see a glimpse into something that's beyond what you understand, beyond what you can imagine, beyond what makes sense. And we don't know. There's a whole lot we don't know. And I feel so confined by people who will stand in front of me and tell me I know the right answer to everything. Like, that seems like a lot. That seems like a lot to say.
Yeah. Well, that resonates with me because I am very much in a space of, I don't want to hear really answers. I'm very interested in people asking really interesting questions. Mm-hmm. But the last thing I want is someone to say, this is how you think about it. This is the way, you know? And it's not that I'm not willing to hear those things. It's just, I'm not really willing to hear those things.
No, you just don't want to be confined by them.
Yeah, because there is a chance, there is a remote chance that at some day, 5-10 years from now, I'm going to be right back in a pew, we're going to be doing ministry.
Sure.
I mean, there's a non-zero chance.
I tell you all the time, you're a pastor at heart.
Yeah, there's a non-zero chance that happens.
Right.
And this is just a part of the journey, and that's okay. If that happens, that happens. If not, it's also okay. So, Speaking of a journey, though, I think this episode is coming to an end. So, I do have one additional disclaimer for this particular episode.
Okay, tell me about it.
Do you have any other concluding thoughts before we disclaimer ourselves out of the episode?
I don't think so. Thank you for asking.
So the disclaimer I have is as we go through this process, I know I kind of set it up at the front, but I kind of want to say at the end, as you walk away, my goal is to not to drudge up past experiences. And the truth is the experience that we had while we were working at that mega church were actually amazing. And there was a lot of positivity and positive experiences had there. And there's that phrase that says someone is a villain. How's it go? You're the villain of someone's story. Yeah. Everyone is a villain of someone else's story. And I know for a fact that I'm a villain to some people's stories. Mm. And I just want to acknowledge that when we look backwards to think about how we've been hurt, I am less interested in keeping people as villains. I just want to acknowledge what happened and to have a positive response to my feelings and to be authentic to my feelings. Mm-hmm. And this isn't a knock on the people that we worked alongside, or this isn't a knock on what some churches are doing. Some churches are not doing great. Some churches are doing very terrible things, but that isn't the case here.
But some are doing great.
Some are doing great. Yeah. You know? And so that, I think that's just my concluding disclaimer, is to say, as we do these debriefs and, you know, looking back at our experiences and what happened, they're in the past. There's nothing to change. There's nothing to worry about. At this point, it's just about acknowledging growth and how to move forward in a healing way. So that's my concluding thought.
It was a good one.
Was it?
Yeah.
You think so?
That's a
I don't
good
know.
Point.
I feel like I'm singing. I feel like I'm saying that too much. Like I'm trying to alleviate a fear that, you know, we're being too mean and nasty or whatnot.
Okay, so just pause for a second.
Yeah.
Saying that you were hurt by somebody else's feelings is neither mean nor nasty. I'm sorry, by somebody else's actions is neither mean nor nasty. And you and I conduct ourselves with a lot of respect for other people, regardless of where they stand or how they've... We have respected people who other people wouldn't even look at, you know, who society themselves have cast out. Mm. I'm not saying we're perfect. We're obviously not. But, you know, being able to say, hey, this is what I experienced, and this is why I'm not a part of an institutional church right now. There's nothing mean or nasty about that. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are listening or not listening, should be listening, that are on the same journey, feeling like their world just got smaller, like they're really alone, and they don't know what's happening. Like, they're not sure why there's this internal war that's happening. And it's really important for you, as you go through this process, to acknowledge that you had these feelings, but not just acknowledge them, to say that they belong to you.
Well, thank you for saying that. That thank you.
They belong here.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're thank welcome. You.
I'm so glad I married you.
You did good.
I did good. I did. Hey, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Take care.